Hi, welcome back to the TT Wine Explorer podcast. I'm Tanya Tomaszewska. This episode is all about Vegas. Yes, Las Vegas. For longtime listeners, you will recall that my very first full-length episode of this TT Wine Explorer podcast was about Las Vegas. My guest in that episode, episode 2, was my friend Graham McLennan. Graham produces and hosts his own podcast called Chefdemony. His episodes are great multidisciplinary adventures typically connected with the world of food, chefs, food travel, and sometimes lawyers. I highly recommend it. Among many other things, Graham is a lawyer, chef, foodie, and serious Vegas geek. I found that last part interesting and intriguing when I first met Graham, as he and I seem to have a lot in common, but I really wasn't sure about this whole Vegas thing and whether I'd actually ever really want to go there and spend any time. Well, today, I'm here to admit, it looks like I love Vegas, and I'm turning into a Vegas geek too. A few weeks ago, I spent 5 nights in Vegas. It was essentially my very first time there. I went once passing through, essentially, to start a road trip to Arizona and New Mexico. But this time, it was all about Vegas, and I loved it. While I was there, I really wanted to put the phone down and just be present in that crazy moment, and I left everything in Vancouver behind. So I only contacted Graham a few times when I was there to let him know how much I was loving it and how much I loved all of the tips which he provided to me before I went. But when I came back to Vancouver, I gave Graham a call for a quick download. It seemed to me at that time there was so much more to talk about, so much to process. So I decided to do just that in this sidebar episode by way of epilogue to episode two. I can't tell you how many people contacted me after that very first episode I did with Graham to let me know how much they enjoyed hearing his story and his observations about Vegas. This included people like me who said before they listened to that episode, they really had no interest in ever learning about or going to Vegas. Now it was high on their list. And as I've said many times to myself and my fellow travel enthusiasts, for me, this is what travel can be all about if you're open to it. It's about learning, adventure, and surprise. And so, in this sidebar chat, Graham will interview me. I hope that you enjoy my discussion with Graham McLennan today. Let's fly.
Approach the bench. It's time for sidebar.
Hi, Graham. Thanks so much for coming back to join as my guest. Well, actually, as my co-host today.
Tanya, thank you for having me back. I could not be more excited about this topic to discuss Las Vegas with you again and now because you have been there. I'm super looking forward to our chat.
Great. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to hand it over to you now.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, let's just start with overall impression. And I know from what you've told me in person and from the intro to this episode, I think I know that your impression was a good one. But before we get into details, let's just start there. What was your overall impression of Las Vegas? It seems to inspire strong reactions from people.
It does. Someone said to me before I left, people either love it or they hate it. So I think I was in the love camp. I think that there really is something for everyone there if you're open to it. And you decide what you're going to take from it, what you're going to immerse yourself in. So I tried to go with an open mind, try not to have any preconceived notions about how I was going to experience it, you know, what I was going to like, what I wasn't going to like. As I mentioned, I left everything at home, as it were, and I just wanted to jump into it. You know, essentially, have a brain dump. Someone said, just go have a brain dump. Turn it all off, empty the mind, just let it ride.
Vegas is very, very
you know,
effective.
Use a gambling expression. I didn't gamble. We'll get to that. But, you know, just kind of just empty the mind and go into it, kind of a clean slate. So I tried to do that. And I felt like I was just scratching the surface at the end of that 5 days. There's no way you can do it all in one trip. And I really didn't try to. You know, my objective was to go and get a general overview and then dive into the granular on a few of the things. And that was really, you know, my impression was that you can do that. You can go and have almost mini adventures within this wild and crazy place. And although, you know, I went to empty my brain, my brain was equally stimulated when I was there by all sorts of things. And I guess from altitude, literally and metaphorically, I remember landing late at night and seeing the lights come out of nowhere, you know, the darkness of the desert.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you're landing and these lights, it's the strip, the skyline. And then you land in that world and you get in a taxi and you go to the strip and you see what you're going into.
And it's sensory overload.
It was that very initial feeling that, wow, like, what have I come into? I really like that.
I love landing both during the day, but of course, particularly at night. And you're right. It's just this seemingly unending swath of desert. And then you see a little pinpoint of light in the distance, and then it gets bigger and bigger. And wow, descending next to the strip at what is now Harry Reid International Airport is a really special experience. Okay, let's talk about the strip. Of course, there are different parts to Las Vegas. I love the strip. I often stay on the strip. I also love downtown, or what they call Old Vegas, Fremont Street. There are a whole bunch of areas. Those are the two main ones, I would say, that we as tourists tend to experience. You went for the glitz. You stayed on the strip.
So, yeah, I went for the gusto. You know, I was going to go all in.
Well, what a perfect way to start. And you stayed at the Cosmopolitan, which is right next door to those magic Bellagio fountains and across from Paris. And wow, I feel like I'm there right now. So how was your experience at Center Strip?
You know, it really couldn't get more Vegas, so to speak. And I think for my first visit, it was perfect in that regard. So yes, thank you very much, because the Cosmo was in your short list of suggestions for me for accommodation, and it worked out for the dates and the pricing. That was great. And we'll get to pricing in Vegas later. But I was right in the middle of the action. And my flight from Vancouver actually ended up being delayed for a number of hours, which had some downsides, but the upsides were I had more time at the wine bar in YVR. But also, as a result, when checking in at the Cosmopolitan at midnight, where it didn't seem like it was, you didn't know what time of day it was because nothing ever sleeps there, they ended up doing an upgrade on the room. And so was on the 28th floor with a balcony looking out at that quintessential postcard scene of the Bellagio, the fountains, the Eiffel Tower, winds, all the lights, and then the distance, the top of the sphere. So I kind of walked in. I'm like, okay, I can go home now because I've had my Vegas experience, right? Well, I didn't, but I had that picture postcard. So for positioning, I think the Cosmo, it's great. It's modern. It's airy. There are 4,000 rooms there. And, you know, the scale, and not just every hotel there on the strip seems to have 4,000 rooms. And although the casino areas and the restaurant outlet areas and the conference areas, you know, you get the sense of a lot of people and movement. Once you kind of get into the elevator and you go up to what can be a sanctuary, it's weird too, because you go up and then you're quiet. You're in this quiet room and you look out these windows and you see all that frenetic activity. So I did like that, because you could see the lights, you could see the huge size of Videotrons on the side of the buildings with ads and people moving. But yet you could be in this space looking out at it almost like an observer. So for me on that first trip, I think that was great. Also the sense of kind of being in the middle of what I call a Disneyland for adults, you know, that's what I think it is. There's every hotel has a different theme. It was developed at a different time. People are walking around. Like, that's one of the main activities, right? Just people
just
watching
it.
And everyone's doing the same thing. They're from all over the world and they're all wandering and they're all doing the same thing, which is people watching everyone else. Right. And it's a really weird feeling. So that's kind of my impression. I'm glad I stayed there for that. It gave me a real sense of the strip. It's easy to, I mean, you can walk a lot. You can also, you know, Uber and taxi, but there's the Deuce bus, you know, that can take you up and down
absolutely.
The strip, which is great. And it's got something. It's got all the fancy celebrity chef restaurants. It's got the hole in the wall retail. It's got the Walgreens and the CVS's if you just want to go and buy some water and some fruit. It's just, it doesn't stop though. It just doesn't
it
stop.
It just doesn't stop. Well, I love, here's one thing that I loved hearing about your experience is the upgrade on check-in. And this is something that I think Vegas does better than anywhere else, because they have these crazy hotels that have 4,000 rooms in them. And I think your odds are actually better if you check in later. If it's midnight, they know what the remaining inventory is. Mm-hmm. And I think Vegas does a great job of exceeding people's expectations. And if they can give you that upgrade, they do. And it just leads to this feeling for me, anyway, I'm curious to hear your thoughts of, wow, they're actually taking care of me. They're giving me something here.
Well, you know, yeah. And I know we talked about this because it feels it's a standout now. It feels if you go anywhere else, if you're asking for upgrade or you've been late, or it seems like it's going to be a no, you know, or you're out of luck. Or if you're lucky, you might even lose your room if you're late. And so it was a novel feeling. And I really was trying to get my brain around it. Like, how did I get upgraded to a room that's essentially the size of my apartment in downtown Vancouver, yeah. right? And for 5 nights. And, I'm not on their register. I don't gamble there. What gives? And I think you're right. It's like, why not? You know, why not now? I'm telling everyone this. And I would, suggest it as a place. And I like that. And this goes to Vegas. We've chatted about before, I think, which is the entrepreneurship and the looking forward and how can we make this better and how do we grow? And we have to change to keep up in Vegas and brand differentiation. And you've got millions of people every year coming. I mean, I was reading a stat. I think it's even more than people that go to New York City now. You have to stand out. There are lots of competitors and they did a good job with that.
Good. I'm delighted to hear that because I can say that there is a flip side to that. If you land at 2 p.m. and it's a particularly busy day, then you can wait in a line for a long, long time. And Vegas has mastered the art of slicing and dicing and charging for upgrades when they can. So they will charge you.
I was lucky being late.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It can lead to some great experiences. Now, one place on the Strip, or I suppose very near to the Strip, certainly visible from the Strip, that I haven't been to yet, but it is the place that people are currently talking about, is the Sphere, opened recently with U2, of course. I haven't been, but I live in an online Vegas chatter sphere. and so I certainly know lots about it and have heard lots about it. I want to go. Did you get to go to the Sphere?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
So it's omnipresent. You know, I didn't go into the Sphere. I didn't go in to see a show. But it is, if you're going to the Strip or you're just in Las Vegas, it is there. So from the beginning of landing at the airport, getting in a taxi, going to the Strip, all of a sudden you see this huge round sphere changing colors. It's like it's alive, you know, changing colors, changing designs. And you can't help but look. It is now that in the Strat, I suppose, are landmarks. And I remember asking the taxi driver, you know, what's your cheat sheet? What do you tell people? What are your top three things to do for tourists but not too touristy? He said the Sphere. He goes, the Sphere for sure. I go take my family there, go inside. So I didn't go inside, but I saw it. So you see it everywhere. And as I mentioned, the room I was in, I could see the top part of the Sphere.
Right,
I was
right.
on the 28th floor. That's amazing because you just constantly see this change in color, this thing. And I loved it. And you can go on tours, aside from the shows, you can go on tours inside that are a couple of hour experiences. I didn't do that on this trip. But you can walk up close to it and stand under it on one of the main drags. I think it's Las Vegas Boulevard. And take a picture. And so you can get close to it and see what it's all about. It's wild. So no, long story short is I didn't get in, I didn't see a show, but you still can have that Sphere experience in my view.
Still have the experience. Yeah, it sounds amazing. And what I'm hearing from people who are in Vegas and very much into the marketing of Vegas and the business side of Vegas is it is currently the attraction where people globally are saying, we got to go. Like
yeah.
people are actually getting on planes because of that attraction.
Absolutely. And I know from people I know here in Vancouver with the Las Vegas show, I know a lot of people who went there just to go and see that show. I mean, I would go on a future visit inside. This one, like I said, I was just kind of doing Vegas 101.
Yes.
I felt that's all I could handle.
Yes. Oh, I know. Well, there's so much. Well, let's get into a little bit more detail about the things that you did do in Vegas.
Yeah.
And we alluded to this a bit at the beginning of the show. Here's what I find about Vegas. You can have so many different experiences. Two people could go to the same hotel for the same days and have completely different experiences. And of course, we just pick what we're interested in and what we like. So I tend to spend more time in restaurants than many of my friends do. I have zero interest in the nightclub scene, which I understand is absolutely phenomenal in Vegas, and it is never even remotely near my radar. So that's a whole swath of Vegas that I know nothing about. I do know about gambling. I do know about some amazing shows that I've seen in Vegas. I understand you didn't do either of those things, which which I would say are pretty prototypical Vegas.
I know. Like, what did I do?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't gamble. I didn't go to shows. I didn't really go to many. I didn't go to celebrity chef restaurants.
Right.
What the heck was I doing out there?
Surely you weren't by the pool all day, every day.
I was not by the pool until the last day for 4 hours, and that's because the weather was poor, unseasonably cool. So I didn't get much pool time in, but really, I don't know if I would have had time. So what did I do? What kept me busy? Well, a lot of it was thank you very much to you for some tips that I had under my belt. The main categories, you mentioned this old Vegas, what we call our downtown. I just loved it. The Fremont Street District.
Yes.
So I don't know how to describe it to people. I'll have to put some pictures up in social. But you know, it's that kind of more of the gritty where it started, or where you would imagine in your mind if you've never been there. You know, if you look at Vegas movies from the 70s or the 80s, like it's the old strip, small, the lights of the plaza, the Golden Nugget, and then these, you know, the Fremont Street pedestrian mall, which is closed off, and it's, I don't know, rows of restaurants and shops and open bars. You can just get a drink and walk down the road and dive bars. And it's more gritty. It seems more real, you know, and I just loved it. So I hit some, I won't say dive bars, but, you know, not fancy bars.
Not fancy bars, yeah.
A couple of examples, Atomic Liquors.
Yes.
Wow. I think it's one of the oldest ones in that area. Atomic, because there's a lot of references in Vegas to Atomic because they did the atomic bomb testing out in Nevada. So, you know, you go into this place, it's dark. It's like a tavern, American style tavern. You walk in, it's dark. I think I went in the middle of the afternoon. There are a couple people sitting at the long bars. Everyone looks at you when you walk in the door. And then there's like this fabricated atomic bomb mushroom cloud in the corner.
Of course.
Fantastic. Just fantastic. So there's that. And then there was a great one I came across on St. Patrick's Day where everyone was out in a massive street party. It's called Hogs and Heifers Saloon.
Oh, yes.
You know, the quintessential packed out, two people dancing on the bars to music from the 90s, outside standing with your green beer or your regular beer. Really, really great. So things like that, that are, you know, just more, not necessarily hole in the wall because we all know about them, but just really you can go in, relax, jeans, t-shirt, you're mixing it up with everyone. So I love that kind of scene there. Also, that's the world of pawn shops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole other story about Vegas. Obviously, there's a lot of gambling. There's a lot of money activity. And you see kind of the pawn shop and you see the side of the business activity that's kind of supporting or part of that activity and pursuit. So one of the places stumbled across was, I think there was a reality show. Was it called Pawn Wars?
I can't remember. Pawn Stars.
Yeah. So went into there. So stuff like that. Museums. Who would have thought museums? We'll get back to that. Maybe I'll save that for a separate little part of the chat because there's a lot to talk about. But museums of all things. So I love that part of town. Just loved it. Would definitely go back and spend time there. And I mean, I have a whole list of places that I could talk about.
I had an experience there on the drinking front. It wasn't wine, but we were having some cocktails that I just thought captured the sense of that place for me. So I was sitting in the D at Long Bar.
Yes. Yeah.
And having a drink with my friend Scott, who blogs about Las Vegas at Vital Vegas. He has a great blog and podcast. So we were chatting there and I wanted to interview him for Chef Demoni. But we decided that we were going to go over to Four Queens. And at the D at Long Bar, they had served our drinks in plastic cups just because it's not a particularly fancy place. And that's fine. We were just sitting there. So Scott said, well, why don't we go over to Four Queens? And I said, sure, that sounds great. And I remained seated because we had just got our drink. Scott picked up his drink and walked out the door. And my overloaded Canadian sensibilities just, I thought, what are you doing?
That's the one thing, that I love, like on the strip. It's not like everyone has a drink because it's not novel. It's not like Lex, like, oh my gosh, we can go and walk around with an open beer in our hand. Who knew? And I felt that sense of freedom that I love. Similarly, you know, when I go to London, you can just stand outside of a pub and have a pint and drink, and it's not a big deal.
Whatever
your drink is, if it's alcohol or not, doesn't matter. You can still do it. And I love that sense of freedom. I mean, like you've mentioned before in our other conversations and podcasts, like there are really no rules in Vegas, right?
Not a lot.
So we're coming from a world in British Columbia and Canada as, you know, peace, order, and good government. And there's peace and order there, but there, you can just kind of walk around with a drink, and it was fun if you wanted to. So thanks for reminding me of that. I enjoyed. I maybe did that once. I didn't actually take advantage of it. I was too busy kind of looking up around me. But, you know, I love that part of town. The other thing which I did, which I loved also, was getting out of town. So Red Rock Canyon is with no traffic, 30-minute drive out of town.
Very quick.
So, wow. Like, just wow. It is a spectacular park. Beautiful. If anyone has been to Southern Utah, Arizona, certain parts of British Columbia, you've got the Red Rock, beautiful canyon hiking. It wasn't a great weather day when I went. I will definitely go back. But the sense of, you know, 25 minutes out of downtown Vegas, you're in a rental car, you can get out into nature. There's no one there. There's a fantastic visitor park to go to. It's such a juxtaposition, and it was spectacular. So I really, really enjoyed that. I would go back for sure to do some hiking. There's also, it's a mountain biking mecca, so you can go out and do that. And just the sense of going from this completely human-made world in the middle of the desert, coming out of nowhere, to driving in that desert for 25 to 30 minutes and having the ability to be in this complete natural beauty. It was something. So that was the other part of the experience, which I absolutely loved and would go back to.
Absolutely. Anytime I leave Las Vegas in a car, I have this experience where, because it's such a manufactured thing, a manufactured community, at one point you're driving along and you're going through suburb after suburb after gated community after subdivision. And then boom, it ends. There is a line where it ends, and then you're in the desert, and it is wide open desert. It is a really unsettling feeling how quickly you move from civilization into these wild places.
Absolutely. Sorry, I was just remembering it. I was thinking about it.
Yeah, no, it really is quite stark. But let's come back into the civilization. You mentioned museums, and there are some in Vegas that I think there are some cultural attractions in Las Vegas that I think are really top notch. And I'm curious for your thoughts, because again, there's this juxtaposition from civilization to wild territory. There's this juxtaposition from crazy dive bars and 24-hour casinos to some really interesting cultural offerings. So what did you take in on the museum side, if you did?
Well, the Neon Museum is fantastic. So that's in that kind of old Vegas side of things. Just beautiful. I don't know how to describe it, except you might feel like you're what would have been an old parking lot in the middle of the desert.
Yes.
That, you know, outside of the old strip. And it is literally an outdoor museum of artifacts. I'm going to call them historical artifacts, which are neon signs, going to some of the very first ones that were put up in Las Vegas. You know, what it would have been in the 30s and 40s. Does that sound about right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah,
and, yes. Yeah, and a bit of the history about that fact, neon signs were started using argon. Gas, and that they had certain colors. And then the whole explosion of different colors and the use of neon on the strip in Vegas. And so there are these massive signs, old Stardust signs, Hard Rock Cafe, signs that from the 50s, from the kind of the drive-in motel places, from restaurants. And the docents are great. You walking through history. And what I love is I went late afternoon, it was sunny. And then over sunset, all the lights come on. Mm. And then it is just amazing. So I highly recommend the Neon Museum. It's not huge, but you could spend easily an hour or two there. And, you know, my tip is go late afternoon or early evening just so you can see the lights come on.
See the lights
coming up. It's fantastic.
So that
had been recommended to me by a couple of people. So I'm so glad that I did that.
Good. Good. My favorite, I just have to chime in before we leave the Neon Museum. There's a sign, or was, I don't know if it's still, I'm sure it's still there. I don't know if it's out on display, but it was from the Tropicana Cafe. And I'm pretty sure that was separate from the Tropicana Hotel, which just closed 2 days ago. Very sad.
Yeah. That was there.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. And the tagline in neon was, it says Tropicana Cafe, and then what was it? Free aspirin and tender sympathy. I thought there is what you need on certain Las Vegas mornings.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Oh, it's beautiful. So thoughtful.
Yeah.
The Neon Museum, highly recommend. In the same general area, not next door, but in that part of quadrant of Las Vegas is the Mob Museum. Yes, about mobsters. And the whole background on that part of the history of the region and the building of Vegas. So really very detailed photographic archival writings about the various families and personalities driving that part of the business. In addition to all of that, there's, I'll call it a CSI crime lab part. I didn't go into it, but for anyone who's into that part of Vegas, you can go in and learn and do a workshop about, you know, how CSI crime labs run their analysis. Wild. And there was a distillery tour. There's a distillery in the basement because obviously lots of, you know, kind of the prohibition era in the States and in Canada engendered a lot of business activity. And that was quite timely because here in BC, I'm considering lots of things about the regulatory regime to do with alcohol in the post-prohibition era. So it was very timely for me and learning about the rum running and also, you know, things going up and down the border between the US and Canada on both Pacific and Atlantic. So that was really interesting. So anyone interested in kind of the mob underpinnings of Vegas or crime or prohibition, that place is for you. So it's fun. And the people, the docents, they're really into it, like very, very knowledgeable down to like, you could say, well, when did that person get the hit? And they'll tell you. Yeah, it's wild. It's a whole other world inside that place. But so Wow. If that's your, you know, you want to learn about that, that's great. Outside of the other direction from the strip, anyone into vintage cars, you might want to go check out the Shelby Heritage Center.
Oh, cool.
So, I didn't know much about Carroll Shelby, but for anyone who's into cars, Aston Martins and Mustangs, you'll know about Carroll Shelby. Go. Even if you're not into cars, go. It's wild. There's this whole hangar of cars. It's still a shop where they work on restorations of cars. It's like going into a museum. There's great swag. So if you, anyone out there, or you have someone in your life going to Vegas who's into cars, I highly recommend that. So those are three very different experiences. And I learned a lot. This is when my brain couldn't turn off. You know, my brain was going, learning. And it was great to have these experiences that you could kind of check out of the other kind of activity and kind of go to them. So the things that I didn't get to that I'd add on for next time, there's Atomic Bomb Museum. Apparently there's like a bomb, or at least my mom tells me that. So I've got to go look at the bomb. I don't know what kind of bomb it is, but there's an Atomic Bomb Museum. And apparently there's a Punk Rock Museum. I don't know if you've been to that.
No.
So those sound intriguing. And one whole thing that I didn't really access other than that was visible to the everyday pedestrian was there's a whole art scene there. You know, there's the art collection at the Wynn, the Aria Hotel near the Cosmo, there's an art museum there. So there's a whole art world, you know, in addition to the Chihuly, which is hanging in the Bellagio lobby, yeah. That I would also go and kind of piece through next time.
Okay, fair enough. There's also on that vein, I have not been there yet, but there's a fantastic bookstore I keep hearing about called Writer's Block in Las Vegas. So there's a really active writing and reading scene in Las Vegas as well. Hmm. So maybe put that
on
your
list.
I'll
add that for my list.
Yes. All right. I can't believe I haven't asked you about this yet in this interview. Let's get to the important thing, the food in Las Vegas. My favorite topic.
Yeah.
What did you have? What did you love?
Well, it's funny because last time we were chatting about wine in Vegas, I remember we didn't really talk much about wine. Right. So food. Okay. I'll talk about the things I didn't have to start, which is there are celebrity chefs everywhere, you know, posters, restaurants, outlets, Gordon Ramsay, Bobby Flay, as examples. And you had provided a lot of tips to me before of where to go and in our first podcast discussion. And I had those all those listed. But ironically, for this trip and for the most part, I didn't go to them, not because of a lack of interest, but because I felt, wow, that would be a really big investment of huge chunks of time. And not that I'm not interested, but I was wandering around everywhere and I kind of grazed while strolling, if that makes sense.
Yes,
so kind of walk sure around, does. Stop for a beer, have a bite, keep going. At the end of the day, go back to the balcony in the hotel room, take some wine, have some cheese, take in the scene, go and wander on the strip at 9 at night. So it's weird. And I'll get to my one really big signature restaurant experience in a moment. But in the meantime, some things that I really liked as part of that grazing adventure, Evil Pie. Mm. So Evil Pie is in Fremont Street in Old Vegas, named after, you guessed it, Evel Knievel.
That's right.
And I didn't even know about it. And I'm like, oh, I want lunch. And looked in, kind of looked like a dive bar, all this kind of paraphernalia and altar to evil above the bar, kind of like what you'd expect an American tavern to look at. Fantastic beer selection and pizza made. So you go buy your beer, get a number. The pizza was thin crust. It was amazing. The sound, the, you know, playlist, the music was great. Everyone and anyone was coming in. The beer was great. And the one thing I will say is it's not as expensive as a lot of other Vegas outlets. Vegas is extremely expensive.
It
Holy
sure
sticker shock
is.
On yeah. so much stuff. So I loved Evil Pie for a beer, pizza, a break. So if you haven't been there, I think you like pizza. I would recommend it.
Love it.
So I love that. Another place in the Arts District, which we really haven't chatted about much because I didn't get as much time there as I wished, but you had sent me this tip before I went, which is Letty's Mexican. Wow. Oh my gosh. You have to go. It's amazing. Small place, very colorful, friendly service. Again, not overly expensive, great price point. Standouts, pork belly tacos, braised pork belly tacos. I almost cried. It was so good. I don't eat a lot of pork. Wow. I had to have a couple. The guacamole and smoked mezcal margarita. Just done, and done.
Oh,
just
my
go.
Goodness.
I'll wow. go back
okay.
for sure.
Okay. I have to give a shout out to my friend Karen, who lives in Las Vegas, and she is a serious Vegas foodie. And she and her husband and another friend have a great podcast called the 360 Vegas Podcast. Anyway, I was texting with Karen about food in Las Vegas, as I often do, and she recommended Letty's. So,
well, I highly recommend it. I'd go back. There's great food trucks on Fremont Street again. There's something called the Project Barbecue. I don't know if you know that outlet, but they had one on St. Patrick's Day and kind of brisket tacos and
big truck.
Coleslaw. And, oh, yum. Yeah. So I love food trucks and I love barbecue and America knows how to do barbecue. So I availed myself of that opportunity when I was there. Just quickly before I come back into the town, I mentioned my trip to Red Rock. Outside of Red Rock, about a 15 or 20 minute drive is a town called Blue Diamond. I don't know if you've been there.
No.
Again, it's
so.
Kind of, you feel in the middle of nowhere, just you can go there. Best lunch sandwiches I've had anywhere in a long time in a little place called Cottonwood Station. It's a cafe. And it seems to me, a mecca to me for everyone who's out there for hiking and mountain biking. It's right next to a Trek bike store for bike rentals and adventures.
Fantastic.
So the crowd in the cafe was more what I'd expect to see in like Oregon, Washington, BC, Squamish. Very kind of again juxtaposed to what I was seeing on the strip. So I kind of had an out-of-body experience. I felt really at home, I guess.
Yes.
And so the sandwiches were outstanding. I had some sort of grilled cheese sandwich and a cup of tea. So I highly recommend Cottonwood Station if you go to Red Rock. Okay, coming back into town, of course, you've got to go for an In-N-Out burger because we don't have those in British Columbia. So yes, did the In-N-Out. But I would say the highlight of my dining and gourmandizing experiences for this trip was Oscar Steakhouse that you had recommended.
Oh, good.
Oh my gosh, just amazing. It's everything that I would have imagined for that kind of old school Vegas steakhouse that I'd want in an experience. You know, it's in the Plaza Hotel in Old Vegas downtown, a golden dome room off the side of the road with, you know, banquettes, round, dark wood, the waiters in, and it is mainly waiters in white jackets. And then, you know, there are a lot of women on the staff too, but I just remember the white jackets, kind of old school. We had a fantastic bartender. She was amazing, really friendly, great mixologist. And it's what you'd want, like the steak. I mean, I just have to tell you what I had because you can imagine
Please.
It. But Caesar salad, just top notch. Asparagus, but those thick, the thick stalks of asparagus, just perfectly cooked.
Perfectly cooked, yeah.
The ribeye, perfect medium rare, perfect salted, sliced once it was cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Brussels sprouts, baked, crispy, slightly browned with some Parmesan on top. Seared scallops.
Oh, it's just the mac and
cheese.
Coat.
The
oh,
mac and yeah. cheese in a deep dish, little cast iron. I don't eat a lot of mac and cheese, just heavenly. And for dessert, also in a cast iron, the deep dish chocolate
chocolate
chip cookie with a vanilla ice cream on top.
Yes.
Every single morsel was fantastic. The service was fantastic. The chef of the evening came out to say hello. And so thank you for that, because I expect that you maybe sent a little message that you, when your friends was coming.
Fantastic.
Our waiter, he was amazing. It was great. I would go back in a minute, and I would have no qualms recommending it to people who are looking for that old school steak experience.
Vegas
and
steak
I would
experience.
Say in the context of Vegas pricing, I found it was really reasonable for what you got,
right.
in my view.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with that, which is to say it is not inexpensive, but for what you get and in that larger context, I have no quibble with the menu pricing at all. A couple of thoughts on Oscars that I have that might be helpful to listeners who are interested in this whole notion of Vegas history, and a tie-in actually with the Mob Museum. So Oscars is, of course, named for Oscar Goodman, who was the mayor of Las Vegas. The current mayor of Las Vegas, Carolyn, is Oscar's wife. They are between them, they've had four terms as mayor of Las Vegas. And before politics, Oscar was an attorney for alleged mobsters. And he was a driving force behind the Mob Museum. Anyway, the Plaza and Oscars, they host a series of dinners called the Oscar Dinner Series, where you get a great meal and Oscar shows up and he talks about his cases defending these alleged mobsters. So for anybody interested in the intersection of law and Vegas history and steak, there you go. Those dinners
I'll
are
go back.
Amazing.
We have to meet there.
Yes.
And the cocktails are outstanding.
Yes.
Just everything about it. I was really in my happy place, I got to say. So thank you.
Of
Thanks for
course.
Sending me there.
Excellent. That's great. And those dinner series are recorded, incidentally, and they're published. So anybody can listen to them. They're on a podcast called On the Corner of Main Street, which is produced by the Plaza Hotel.
Great.
So, yeah. So very good fun there. Now, what did you have with your ribeye at Oscars? You must have had a glass of wine at some point on this trip.
I know, isn't that funny?
Like, I heard of actually, beer and tea.
At the end of my trip, I was like, I actually didn't drink a lot of wine. Okay. So, yes. Oscars, amazing cocktail. I don't remember what it was called, but it was great. I think it was whiskey-based or rye-based. But the wine list was great. And so, you know, going to a steakhouse, you think Big Red, when in Rome, do Rome. Well, Nevada does have maybe some wine, but California, not Napa Valley, to do Cab. I want to do something I don't see in British Columbia or Canada, but something that'll go with the steak and something American, when in Rome. Their wine list was great. So I ended up going with a wine called True Grit. And True Grit is a producer in Mendocino County, in California, and it was a petite Syrah, which is distinct from a Syrah. If anyone hasn't had petite Syrah, you don't, you see California makes a lot of it. Sometimes it's known as Duraf. And it's round and rich and red. And it was great. And what I liked about this wine, it was really approachable, accessible. I liked the name. And on the back of the label, it said, you know, it's the longest running winery in the Mendocino area, and it's passion, perseverance, and true grit. And I just feel that that can be a motto for everyone and anyone, yeah. no matter what your pursuits are. So I had that. That was great. And then, you know, it's funny, I didn't have a ton of wine, but and some of my other wine adventures were maybe not what one would expect. So you had given me a lot of tips about, you know, wine bars to go to and master somms who were operating in Vegas. And I had all the intentions to go and do that. I just didn't. So, you know, for everyday wine enthusiasts, there is something for you there too. So as an example, coming back from Red Walk and heading back into town, who would have thought of stopping at Costco, right? So
yes.
Stop at Costco. there is amazing cheeses and charcuterie items, perfect for your own wine and cheese on your balcony at your hotel if you have one, or somewhere else. And why am I saying this? Well, for those who live in where the city I live, our Costcos don't have wine. Not the last time I checked. And Costco has amazing buying power and amazing wine and alcohol selections, not only the selections, but the pricing.
Yeah.
And the Kirkland label. So I got 3 bottles of wine, each of them under $20 US, and they were each outstanding.
Wow.
So I got a Kirkland Gigondas from Southern France for, I don't know what, $15. Excellent. So good. A Washington State Pinot Gris and an Oregon Pinot Noir. Like some of my favorite wine varieties.
Yeah.
Like, why not? Just really good. So you don't have to, I guess this is a note saying, you don't have to go out to the fancy wine bars. I mean, next time I will. you know, that is a great opportunity. And for people from jurisdictions where you don't have wine in Costco, it's a fun adventure to go in and look. So I did that and I had some great wines that way. And then the other wine experience that I thought was interesting from a wine perspective was Italy, where I've never been to Italy. There's Park one in MGM. The New York casino on the strip.
I think it's next door at Park MGM, I think.
That's right. Sorry, yeah. Park MGM. And so I haven't been to the Italy outlets in New York, so I don't really have much to compare. You know, I didn't eat there. There was a lot going on, but I did stop to have a drink because I felt I wanted one. And I got a Sicilian white wine that was really, really delicious, albeit very expensive for where you're sitting. I think it was like $25 for the glass by the time you have tip and tax. But it was a nice glass. I wouldn't have had another one, not because I didn't like it, but because, you know, I didn't necessarily need to spend that at that point.
Yes.
But I enjoyed the experience of wandering around and seeing the Italy space. So that was good. And I love Sicilian wine. I love island wine and volcanic wine. And I don't think I would have had that, wouldn't been able to find that one where I live. So those are examples of the kind of wines. But to be honest, I just kind of had these experiences as I was kind of in and out of things.
Yeah.
But that's what it's about.
That absolutely it is. Do you have any places or activities that are on your to-do list for what I hope is your inevitable next trip? You know, because because you have to, you can't do everything in Vegas. So you didn't gamble this time. You didn't do shows this time. Maybe there's some other wine bars you spotted that you want to check out. Or have you got a notepad going for what you're going to do next time?
Yeah, great question. So I'd love to go back to the Arts District where Letty's is. And there's a whole brewery circle there, right? So I'd love to check out that area. Maybe stay at the American, I think it's called, another place that you'd... Or the English. The English, sorry. So maybe stay there. Back to Oscars for sure. And I wanted to go and check out some music, like some jazz. I'd heard about some jazz bars, maybe go and see something like some Rat Pack tribute band. And anything with live music doesn't need to be huge, maybe a large show, but I really want to tap into the music scene next time. Yeah. I'd like to go back to Red Rock to do some hiking. And for wine, yeah, I mean, I didn't make it this time. I'd love to get to Carver Steak because you've highly recommended it. And I'd love to go to Carver Steak, and have, some food and try their wine. And one of the tapas bars I didn't get to, was it called Edo's?
Edio.
Edio. I was trying to get to the tapas bar, but I didn't get there. So I think focusing next time on the music scene would be great, and some more wine and maybe the craft beer scene. So I think that's what I would focus on.
That sounds like a full dance card already.
Yeah.
One tip on the music scene that B and I have loved, and it sounds, and it is so silly, cheesy Las Vegas. Find a lounge. There's often one in Encore at the Wynn property where they have dueling pianos. And it is great fun because they'll have 2 pianists there and they'll go back and forth. And what you can do is write your request on a piece of paper and fold up a little tip in it because Las Vegas lives on gratuities. And you give this to the pianists and they'll play your song if they know it. So
I'm going to look out for that. Now, that reminds me, now you're heading off to Vegas yourself, going back. So Maybe I'll take the co-host reins back now.
Sure.
I've been talking a lot, so thank you so much for allowing me to articulate everything that some of what's in my head from that trip. But what are you doing on your next trip? You're going soon.
I am going soon, in about a week and a half, as it turns out. And I'm going with a very good friend of mine. So one of my very best buddies from high school. And we're just meeting up to have an experience in Las Vegas. And the funny thing is, this fellow and I, we went to France after high school. And we were both billeted in separate houses. And we lived in France for 5 months. And we sort of studied French. So that was in 1989 when we had that experience together. And now in 2024, we are going to Las Vegas and we are going to stay at Paris. So we're closing the loop. We'll be back.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
So that should be very, very fun. And we've got a very unstructured schedule. So I think we will take in a show. I haven't figured out which one we'll go to. Now, I said I don't have any interest in the nightclub scene, and I really don't, but the Chainsmokers, who I've heard a little bit of and actually like their music, even though I'm far too old for them, they are playing at a club in the Wynn. So
maybe
we'll go check out the Chainsmokers, but I don't yet know. More likely, we'll go to Penn & Teller, and I'm hoping to get to Oscars for dinner myself.
So my gosh. Yeah, say hi to them for me.
I will,
oh my
of
goodness.
Course.
I have a question about Paris. I was thinking about this. I just walked around the base of Paris and the Eiffel Tower. Can you go up in that Eiffel Tower? Is there something up there?
You sure can. Yep, you can go. So there's two things. There's an observation deck really high up. I've never gone that high, but there's the Eiffel Tower restaurant fairly high up. And it is, I went there, I took my mom there in 2007. We were there for a cousin's wedding. And I took my mom for this fancy dinner in the Eiffel Tower restaurant. And it was terrific. So that's a long time ago now. But we had just a great experience. And it looks out across the strip to the Bellagio Fountain. So if you get a view table, it's great. And I think I'll have to check this, but there is a table there. It might be table number 56, but just Google, you know, best table at Eiffel Tower Restaurant, Las Vegas. And it is the table with the view of the Bellagio fountains. And you can now, for a charge, of course, thank you, Las Vegas, you can now actually book that table. So, yeah, that Eiffel Tower is functional as well as beautiful.
Well, I can't wait to hear about your next trip and the tips that you have coming back. And one thing I will say in terms of your impression, you asked me what my impressions were, and I just looping back now to something you mentioned in your episode when you came on to talk about Vegas on my podcast was, I don't remember the exact words, but it's the shark that keeps moving. And I really felt that all of the change and everything is constantly... You've got to better, the person's got to better their, what they're offering, and change and brand and activity and ego and all sorts of stuff. And so it's always happening there. So yeah, I really, really felt that when I was there. And I think that is part of the draw. Like I don't know if I'd go back for 5 nights next time. Maybe 3 might be enough.
3 is good.
but thank you, Graham. Thank you so much for, again, coming back on to have the sidebar and to leading the discussion and interviewing me. But also for your passion and perseverance and grit on getting the Vegas geekery out there into the world. You know, it won't be for everyone, but for those open to it, if not just for the sociological study, I think it's really a great destination. So I'm wishing you bon voyage for this upcoming trip. And thank you for taking the time today. And I look forward to our next sidebar chat. I don't know where we're going to go on that one, somewhere completely different, but I look forward to it.
Me too. Thank you, as always, Tanya. It's been great to chat. And I'm delighted that you're converted to a Vegas enthusiast. So no doubt we will have more chats about it in the future.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for joining this sidebar chat with a flight to Las Vegas today. I hope you enjoyed the ride. I'm not sure where we're going in the next episode, but I hope you'll join me back here on the TT Wine Explorer podcast. Take care.